I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
Your time and expertise are valuable, making Focus one of the most important resources to have at work. These days, professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, and it can be difficult to stay on task with all the emails and documents you have to get through. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, you can stay focused and quickly get through your work with relevant real-time suggestions wherever you write. It works across 500,000 apps and websites, so it can help with everything, from brainstorming presentation ideas to sounding more confident and persuasive in emails and reports. For 15 years, Grammarly has offered best-in-class communication support and enterprise-grade security on a business model that doesn't sell your data. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.
On March 13th, 1989, the Cold War seemed to take a dreadful turn. Around 2:45 a.m., people in Florida and Texas reported an eerie red glow in the sky. Simultaneously, a hiss of static interrupted Radio Free Europe, a station that promoted democracy behind the Iron Curtain. Most drastically of all, the entire power grid of Quebec failed, crashing in just 90 seconds. 9 million people were plunged into darkness. Power grids in 200 other North American cities experienced hiccups as well. People panicked. What was happening? Had the Soviet Union launched atomic bombs? No. It turned out just to be a storm, although probably not the kind you're thinking of. This storm began in outer space. You might remember the solar storm that occurred last May. It produced northern light auroras as far south as Alabama. It was a fun moment, but that was a mild space storm. They can be vastly bigger and more dangerous. In 2019, the U.S. government's Federal Emergency Management Agency released a report saying that only two natural threats could paralyze the entire nation at once. One was a pandemic. The other was a giant space storm. We all saw the havoc the pandemic wrought, but a giant space storm could be even worse. From the Science History Institute, this is Sam Keen and the Disappearing Spoon, a topsy-turvy, sciencey history podcast, where footnotes become the real story. As the son of a wealthy English brewer, Richard Carrington owned his own private astronomical observatory. He loved to while away the hours studying the sun. He was especially intrigued by sunspots, patches of darkness on the solar surface. No one knew what sunspots were in his day, and when Carrington sat down on September 1st, 1859 to examine some sunspots, he was not expecting anything dramatic. But he noticed that there were a lot more sunspots than usual that day. Suddenly, around noon, he saw something bizarre. An eruption. A giant geyser of plasma just leapt right off the surface of the sun. After a moment's bewilderment, Carrington jotted down some notes, unsure what to make of what he had just witnessed. We now call these eruptions solar flares, and Carrington was the first person in history to see one. But what makes the event truly special, and what frightens scientists about solar flares today, is what happened next. That night, people noticed that compasses were not working properly. The needles wobbled or no longer pointed north. Unusually vivid auroras appeared in the heavens, too. And not just at high latitudes. The northern lights appeared as far south as Venezuela. In the northeast United States, people could read newspapers outdoors well past midnight. In the Rocky Mountains, the vivid sky set birds chirping. Dozens of grumbling gold miners rolled out of bed and started making breakfast, assuming it was dawn. Telegraph systems went haywire as well. Some operators got electric shocks, and several telegraph offices started on fire. Some operators disconnected their machines from the batteries, and the machines still worked. One duo in Boston and Maine held a 2-hour telegraph conversation with no power source. Spookiest of all, some telegraphs started spewing out gibberish without anyone touching them. They seemed possessed. It was the strangest night anyone could remember. And as these stories trickled back to astronomer Richard Carrington, he immediately thought back to the solar flare he had seen. Could there be a connection? We know now that his hunch was right. The solar flare was part of a larger event called a solar storm, and was responsible for every one of those bizarre events. During a solar storm, a few related things can happen. First, there's a burst of radiation. Gamma rays, X-rays, things like that. Second, there's a burst of particles, mostly electrons and protons. Scientists don't know exactly what causes solar storms, but they have linked them to the sun's magnetic field. The sun consists mostly of plasma. That's a scorching hot state of matter. So hot that atoms separate into charged particles. It's a boiling soup of ions. Now, charged particles in motion always create magnetic fields, and our sun happens to rotate just like Earth does. So this rotational motion of charged particles inevitably produces a magnetic field. But the sun's magnetic field is not stable. A few years after seeing the solar flare, Richard Carrington made an important discovery about the sun's rotation. The sun is a fluid body, not solid, and by tracking the movement of sunspots over time, Carrington noticed that different parts of the sun rotate at different speeds. Specifically, the solar equator rotates once every 25 days. The sluggish poles take 33. The upshot is that different patches of charged, magnetic field-generating plasma are swirling around at different rates. This causes energy and tension to build up in complicated ways. It's similar to a buildup of static electricity. And every so often, boom! All the extra energy erupts at once in geysers of radiation and particles. The radiation moves at the speed of light, and it arrives at Earth in 8 minutes. The particles take longer. The burst that Carrington saw took 17 and a half hours to arrive. But given that the distance to the sun is 93 million miles, that is still moving pretty fast, 5 million miles per hour. Now, when those particles reached Earth, several things happened. For one thing, Earth's own magnetic field will deflect those incoming particles and channel them toward the poles. After reaching the poles, the particles zip down towards Earth's surface, and on the way, they collide with nitrogen and oxygen molecules in the air. These collisions produce the psychedelic greens, blues, purples, and reds of the northern and southern lights. That's why auroras usually appear only at high latitudes, because Earth's magnetic field channels incoming particles there. However, massive solar storms release so many particles at once that the auroras extend much farther toward the equator. That's why people in Venezuela could see the auroras in 1859, and why birds started chirping and woke up gold miners at 3 a.m. The second major effect of a solar storm involves a distortion of Earth's magnetic field. You can think of our planet's magnetic field as a series of curved lines. They loop around Earth from pole to pole. Think back on that grade school experiment where you placed a bar magnet beneath a sheet of cardboard. Then you sprinkled iron filings on top. The filings arranged themselves into similar loops. During the solar storm, the incoming blizzard of particles produces a shockwave, and this shockwave effectively squashes Earth's magnetic field lines together. It sounds strange, but that's what happens. This squashing of Earth's magnetic field is called a geomagnetic storm. These geomagnetic storms do odd things. They can bamboozle pigeons and other creatures that use Earth's magnetic field to navigate. The storms can also set off magnetically triggered mines. This actually happened during the Vietnam War. A solar storm set off 4,000 magnetic mines at once. On a global scale, geomagnetic storms generate electricity. As mentioned, charged particles in motion create magnetic fields. The inverse is also true. Magnetic fields that are put into motion create electric currents in any matter that's nearby. During geomagnetic storms, the squashing of Earth's magnetic field produces electrical currents within the Earth itself. This causes electricity to build up in the ground. That explains all those strange things that happened with telegraph wires in 1859. Electricity from the ground was rushing up through poorly grounded electrical equipment. That's why the telegraph operators got shocked, and why they could hold conversations without batteries. Earth itself was powering their equipment. And it's not just telegraph lines. The electricity created during geomagnetic storms can course through anything metal. Pipes, railroad tracks, power lines. In fact, that's what happened in Quebec on March 13, 1989. A solar storm squashed the Earth's magnetic field, and the electricity that this produced surged into power lines all over Quebec. This tripped a bunch of circuit breakers, and a cascade of failures took down the whole power grid in just 90 seconds. And frankly, things could have been a lot worse. The 1989 flare was not very big compared to the 1859 Carrington event. Had the Carrington event happened in 1989, the entire North American power grid could have gone down. Satellites are even more vulnerable to solar storms. They're just floating up in space, totally exposed. The influx of particles can flip bits in satellites' memory and scramble it. The particles can also cause a satellite to send out spurious signals, or they can straight up fry its electronics. That's why solar storms are dangerous. If satellites or the power grid went down, that would throw society into chaos. Most phones and communications equipment would no longer work. People would be floundering without information. The loss of power would be especially harrowing. It would disrupt our ability to distribute food, to cool and heat our homes, to provide medical care. We would not recover for weeks, perhaps months. Many people could die. And the really scary thing is that the 1859 Carrington event is itself small potatoes compared to the truly epic solar storms that scientists have recently discovered. Spark something uncommon this holiday season with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. The busy holiday season is here, but Uncommon Goods makes it less stressful with incredible, hand-picked gifts that spark joy, wonder, and delight for everyone on your list. Uncommon Goods scours the globe for original, handmade, absolutely remarkable items. Science lovers can find the Experiment a Day Science Advent Calendar, or spinning topological globes of Mars and the Moon. There's periodic table-themed seasonings, petri dish earrings, and more. Plus, when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you are supporting artists and small independent businesses. Many of their products are made in small batches, so shop now before they sell out. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/spoon. That's uncommongoods.com/spoon for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue one last year.
I know, by a wide margin, too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly Stewart Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue one last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue one last year.
I know, by a wide margin, too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. but we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue one last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
In 2012, a physics graduate student in Japan named Fusa Miyake started a new project. She traveled to a lush island in southern Japan that was famous for its ancient cedar trees, some were nearly 1,900 years old. Miyake found the stump of one ancient cedar tree and removed a slice. Her project involved looking for carbon-14 in tree rings. Carbon-14 forms in the Earth's upper atmosphere when particles from space collide with nitrogen atoms there. Then the carbon-14 joins with oxygen molecules to form carbon dioxide. That carbon dioxide trickles toward the ground and gets incorporated into plants, and then the animals that eat plants. As a result, every living thing on Earth has some carbon-14 in it. Now, carbon-14 is mildly radioactive, and once something dies, it no longer brings new carbon-14 into its body. So scientists can take old organic matter, like ancient timber, and determine its precise age based on the amount of carbon-14 that remains. This process is called carbon dating. Carbon dating has been around since the 1950s, but Fusa Miyake in Japan was trying out a novel type of carbon dating. Most plants take in carbon-14 and distribute it all over their bodies. Trees do something a little different. Trees add a growth ring each year, about a millimeter wide. So any carbon-14 inside a given ring must have come from the atmosphere that same year. Prior to Miyake, no one had measured carbon-14 levels in individual tree rings before. That's because the amount of wood in each ring was so tiny. But by using a new, highly sensitive technique, Miyake succeeded in getting solid readings. And she found something interesting. In her ancient cedar rings, she saw spikes of carbon-14 during certain years. One spike occurred in 774 AD, another in 993 AD. These spikes are now called Miyake events. Scientists don't know exactly what causes them, but solar storms are a leading candidate. And while Miyake was a physicist, her work caused an immediate buzz of excitement in another field, archaeology. You see, it's often hard to date things precisely in archaeology. You can often narrow the date down to maybe a half century or a quarter century. But that's it. One archaeologist has said that if the two world wars had taken place in 1914 BC and 1939 BC, we would not be able to tell them apart in the historical record. That is a bit embarrassing. But Miyake events provided a way around this limitation, a way to date things precisely. For example, archaeologists have known for years that the Vikings landed in Newfoundland in North America sometime around the year 1000. But we could not narrow it down beyond that. Well, two archaeologists heard about Miyake's work and got inspired. They dug up some timber that the Vikings had used to make a longhouse in Newfoundland. Then they copied Miyake's work. They started measuring carbon-14 levels in the logs ring by ring. Most rings had normal carbon-14 activity, nothing special. One ring, however, showed a spike, a crackle of radioactivity. It was the Miyake event from the year 993. And once they had pinpointed that ring, the archaeologists simply had to count the number of rings out to the edge of the tree. 1, 2, 3, 4, all the way to 28. That meant the Vikings cut down that tree to make their longhouse 28 years after 993. In other words, they landed in the year 1021. Pretty nifty. And that's just the start. Believe it or not, archaeologists have no firm idea when the first pyramids in Egypt were built. They also don't know how the ancient Mayan and Aztec calendars line up with our Gregorian calendar, among dozens of other mysteries. But if they can find wooden artifacts from those sites, the Miyake events recorded in the tree rings could serve as a cosmic timestamp to nail the dates down. It could revolutionize archaeology. But however exciting, Miyake events are also a little scary. Because if Miyake events did result from solar storms, they were truly massive storms, with the potential to cause equally massive damage. Here are some numbers for perspective. The atomic bomb that leveled Hiroshima in 1945 released the energetic equivalent of 15,000 tons of TNT. Well, the Carrington event of 1859 released the equivalent of 660 billion Hiroshima bombs. And the Miyake events of 774 and 993 were five times bigger than the Carrington event. Scientists now know of an event from 14,300 years ago that was twice as big as those. We're talking 6.7 trillion Hiroshima bombs. Can you imagine what that would do to our power grid and satellites? Nothing good. For this reason, scientists are currently scrambling to understand solar storms, especially what causes them. Some of these researchers call themselves space weather forecasters. The most important thing they want to know is whether we can predict solar storms. Are there any warning signs? We know that the presence of sunspots will boost the chances of a solar storm, but the correlation is not very strong. Other clues or insights are necessary, and the stakes could not be higher. If we don't figure this out, the consequences for our civilization could be catastrophic. Down here on Earth, the appearance of sunshine often marks the end of a stormy period, both meteorologically and metaphorically. Here comes the sun and all that. But that sense of peace and tranquility is an illusion. Our solar system is a volatile place, and when the sun gets ornery, it can unleash vicious storms of its own, the likes of which we should pray we never see again. This is the Disappearing Spoon podcast, brought to you by the Science History Institute. Be sure to check out their in-depth science history podcast, Distillations. You can find it anywhere you get your podcasts or on their website, distillations.org. You can find more incredible stories in my books or at samkeen.com. You can also book me as a speaker there for your school or event. If you like this podcast, please spread the word and support it at patreon.com/disappearingspoon. You can also get bonus episodes and signed books at Patreon. This episode was written by me, Sam Keen. It was produced by Mariel Carr, Rigoberto Hernandez, and Sarah Kaplan. Our sound design, scoring, and mixing is by Justin Berger of Row Home Productions. Row Home's creative director is Alex Lewis. John Myers is Row Home's executive producer. Thanks for listening.
Row Home Productions.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the reproductive rights amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed Issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin, too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly Stewart Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.